What's in your thoughts? Oh, what's in your mind? What fills your head and what leaves it behind? It's too much today. It's too much today.
All right. Hey there, listeners. Welcome back to Filling in the Gaps Rerolled. We hope you had some great games or experiences since the last time you listened. And if you're new, welcome to the table. We are Filling in the Gaps Rerolled. We are three DMs who come together to help create a session for you to play. We are not an actual play podcast, but we do hope this podcast helped you actually play. With that, let's introduce ourselves, shall we, gentlemen? I'm Sam, one of your hosts.
I'm Malcolm, another one of your hosts.
I am David, the other one.
So to kick this off, I've got a question for you guys. What? Where did it go? Oh, yes. Do you play or use music to set the mood in your games? If so, what music are you playing? Listeners, feel free to let us know as well by the hashtag FITG.
I want to, but I am super bad with music. I've done it once and it worked out pretty well. I had a big boss fight, and I had just heard a song by this Japanese metal band that I thought was really fun. It's called Heartless Scat by Ningen Isu, and it's like a almost 10-minute long grandpa Japanese metal band, and it was really fun, and it set the mood for the boss battle. Because they were fighting a god, and the song is all about, like, kind of being shunned by God.
Funny you should say that. My experience is also with writing, or not writing the music, though I do use a lot of music to help me write. That is way more where my music gets involved. But when it comes to the actual time to roll, everybody initiative type thing, normally it winds up being this band called, let me look it up real quick to make sure I get it right, because I'm not great with names. Yeah, Two Steps from Hell. It is a band that does some really awesome soundtracks for different, like, epic fight scenes. Again, Two Steps from Hell, you're like, you know, right before things really go bad. But it's the that, and then for my favorite experience with music, which I was warned not to do by one of my friends, but I'm so happy I did it anyway. I found a version of Never Gonna Give You Up, but orchestral. So during the final fight, as the bad guy comes down to fight them, I have him dancing down the steps, and they're like, wait. And one of them just goes, wait, is this that stupid Rickroll song? And I was like, yep. This guy's been trolling you this whole time, and he's trolling you in the final fight. Go beat him up if you think you can.
That's great.
So, yeah, that was great.
That reminds me, there's a group that in our Discord, in the Filling the Gaps Discord, I think Combi was talking about the... There's a group that's making medieval versions of popular songs now, so that would be fun. For me,
yes.
My sessions, I only ever play Mambo Number 5. it doesn't matter what's the case or the scenario. It's just 8 hours of pure... It's on YouTube. You can find the link. It really sets the mood right. My players get very much into it. no, my players actually get very distracted by music, but we do the typical, I like playing music that doesn't really fit the scene, because then when I slap them with the false Hydra or a beholder pops out, they get a little more cautious and stuff. I also have players who don't always think things through, to put it nicely. So I have to keep them on their toes, or it's a lot of me explaining on what they should do, and that's not fun for anybody. But when I write, though, I do actually usually listen to, like, anime intros, They usually get me going. I've been working on the World Anvil summer prompts, and I've got at this time to break the fourth wall. I have 6 days to finish 20 more prompts, so maybe.
Yeah, I'm always a little strange about my music taste, but it definitely does play a role into what happens with the characters. I can't listen to, like, oh, life's a happy song, and then be like, oh yeah, I'm writing about, like, the terrible things that I have planned for the party. I'm like, no, I gotta get into the mood about it. And a lot of times, a little peek behind the curtain for all of you out there in the listener zone, I think we're gonna keep it. I like that phrase. But the, for me at least, a lot of times music will give you different emotions, obviously, especially lyrical music, and then you could take that and apply it to your characters. So you could have it be that you, I know for one song I listened to where I originally was writing up a villain, it was very split in the sense of, like, I didn't want to have to do this, but this is what I'm doing. And this isn't my fault. I don't know how to be anything else. And I was like, this is perfect. This is perfect for this villain. I'm throwing out the idea of, like, them just being like, I'm pure evil. It's what happens. And just having it be like, I didn't want to be evil. There isn't another option for me, though. So it's like this cool concept that gets to really get involved in there. But yeah, so, you know, just throw on some music every now and again. You'll hit that one thing. One of my favorite pieces of trivia is that's how Scooby-Doo got picked up for its whole series run, was because it originally was going to get canned because nobody liked it. And then the guy came back in from on an airplane listening to Frank Sinatra. I don't remember which song, but in the song he goes, turning lights in Scooby-Dooby-Doo. And the guy goes, that's the name of the dog. That's what we should have named it. This show should be about the dog and should be named Scooby-Doo. And you guys can look it up. This is true. Now you have Scooby-Doo knowledge randomly in your Fill in the Gaps podcast. But we try to provide you with other news as well. But yeah. So music inspires, man. You gotta let it happen, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Mini tangent aside, you guys have any big things about, like, music and how it influences you? Or have you had characters be influenced by music?
Yeah, I've talked about it before, but my latest character, Leaves from a Vine, was definitely inspired by the song.
Mm.
I think I saw on Twitter earlier today, there is someone is playing a character, Sir Justin of the Timberlakes. And the picture that I saw was of him in, like, the jean outfit with, like, the ramen noodle hair, and very stylized to Dungeons and Dragons, of course. But I was just like, this is clever. Great. And whoever is playing that character, like, good for you. You are funny.
Thank you for giving that gift to the world. We're going to share it with the world so they can have it too. We'd credit you if we knew who you were.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I could go on Twitter to find it, but I'm just not.
No, that's David, what about you? Do you have any situations where the music's really, like, influenced the character or changed the way a story was going to turn out?
No, not really. I'm kind of music illiterate. I just listen to what I know the words do, which...
Yeah, that's fair.
But, I mean, it doesn't really influence how I DM.
I mean, I had a character named Cotton Eye Joe who was very charismatic once. I did not play him. It was back when I was a DM, and I needed to throw somebody at the party to, like, confuse them, because every once in a while, I don't throw in somebody who's clearly on their side or not on their side. So it's just like, there's this guy who's supposed to be a really noble dude named Cotton Eye Joe who lost his eye in combat one time. All the ladies love him, and it's just like, he's really dangerous, but you don't know if he'll help you or not. And he turned out to be a coward because he always runs away and nobody knows where he's gone. And that's how that's done.
That's great. I guess I have another question for you, Malcolm, when we're talking about questions. Shall we roll?
Let's do it!
Alright, for those who don't know, we're going to be rolling on a themes and scenario chart, and that's going to help us build a session today. So what dice are we rolling today, fellas?
I'm boring, I use the same dice. It's clear, it's got leaves in it, they're golden.
I'm somewhat boring. I switch back and forth between two, but not regularly. I have this blue dice that I'm currently using. It's nice. It's like a turquoise. And I'm going to roll for scenarios.
And I'll be rolling for our theme.
That's a 9.
I got a 19.
All right. I will let you both know what those are. So we have... The theme is Living Dungeon, brought to us by our lovely Ren. Thank you so much. And I believe this is you, Malcolm, Surviving the Night. Or Survive the Night.
Oh, boy. Oh, I already loved the first part. And then I got lucky enough to have the second part. Oh, okay. I know what I want to do, but do you guys? I can give you a little more time, because I have an idea.
I mean,
let's hear it.
Yeah, let's hear yours. Yeah.
All right. So, first thing that comes to mind when it comes to Living Dungeon is not that it's one organism, but everything is alive. So, it is like you could do it with a curse, you could do it where it's like infected, but everything. Every part of the dungeon needs to be living. It needs to be an organism unto itself. So you can have that be a really cool thing. Surviving the night is obviously you're trapped inside. Like, there's a cave in, there's something preventing you from leaving, where you just have to do it. Or, if you want to do like a kid version, you just be like, oh, you're too chicken, stay in there and prove to us that you can survive the night inside this crazy dungeon. But no, for the most part, what I would go with is you're trapped inside, you have to survive this place that is actively trying to kill you. And again, it would be fun because it would be harmless things are now incredibly harmful. Stairs will try to like, move, doors will like slam on you when you're halfway through, or like bump you into other places, separating the party. Like, there is a lot here where you can just go buck wild with the concepts of everything is after you and wants to attack you because you should not be in this location. So yeah, it can be like, if you want to have it in a cave, you could have stalactites fall. You could just have it be kind of like a bad luck dungeon if you wanted to run it that way, where it's like everything is going horrifically. And it's not clear if it's bad luck, if it's a curse, if it's the thing being alive. So many concepts. But yeah, that's more along the lines of what I would go with. I am very excited for this still, but I do want to hear what you guys have to say as well.
I got a Fantasia theme kind of brewing with the brooms coming down the stairs, you know, the dun 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 dun, dun. I think that could be fun. Now, when it says alive, does it mean mimics or just like a curse?
Either one.
I think that's up to DM's interpretation.
The first thing that comes to mind for me for this one, and this is just kind of combining the two to come... to mind for both. Like, surviving the night, the first thing I think of is, like, encountering something that's only active at night, like either your vampires or your werewolves, and needing to make it out to the morning. In Living Dungeon, you mentioned them, and we talked about them a little bit a couple weeks ago, I think, with mimics. But it would be really interesting if there was a were-mimic, where it was a person who transforms into a dungeon.
It could be a giant that transforms into a dungeon. That would be cool. I know we were talking about it before we started recording, is One Piece kind of comes to my mind as if they ate like a dungeon fruit. And then you have to go inside it to like get out, or you're eaten by it and you have to escape. But also what an idea that I kind of had is, what if we put a K in front of night And then we have Survive the Night is now like a person. Could be interesting.
Survive the Night in this living dungeon.
Yeah. Like kind of like a labyrinth-esque, where like the walls keep moving. You're running from a minotaur or something, it could be anything. That's what kind of like came to my mind.
Using that kind of concept, one of the things my friend and I were talking about, I'm trying to get more into horror games. I'm not particularly interested in zombies, and that's the big horror trope right now, so I'm like, I'm not into horror games, but I'm trying. And one of the things my friend had said was like, oh, he's like, you want to check out a cool horror game? Check out P.T., which is, I can never say his first name, but Kojima's Silent Hill that was too scary that it got canceled. And I was like, too scary that it got canceled? Let me check out this game. And it's like, you're walking through a house, and then you just hear thumping on one of the doors. And I was like, well, I don't like that. And then you turn around, and you go out, and you go back in, and you're in a hall of doors, and you turn around, and you turn back, and all the doors are open. And I was like, I don't like that at all. Oh my God, that's horrifying. But that was the, I was watching a video of somebody else play, but I was like, oh, I need to watch this in the morning when I'm awake and there is sunlight. but it was the thing where I was like, oh, something like that, where it's like the dungeon is purposely trying to like trick you to get you to stay there. Like maybe it's not a thing of survive the night and escape. Maybe it's a thing of survive the night, try to get out of here. While it's like this whole place is against you. Maybe it is more labyrinthy, which also people out there who are like, how do I do mazes without my party solving it? Good way to do it. Mazes are magically enchanted, have a d6, roll a d6. Each person rolls a d6. If they match, they end up together. So if some two people roll twos, then they end up together, but anyone else goes in a different direction, and you have different things planned on each number for different levels. So you could have a minotaur attacks at 3, but everybody or people got 2 and 4. 2 leads to a point where there's like a koi pond. 4 leads to an area where it's like werejackal. Like you can do whatever, but it's the idea that, okay, this is easier, and it also prevents people from metagaming and go, I know where the exit is. I see it right on your map there. I could just do it. And it's like, no, it's not a thing of solving the maze. It's the thing of, can your characters solve this maze? Because you have overview effect, which the characters would not have. But yeah, that's a great way to do labyrinths and mazes. But yeah, I love the idea of this being a labyrinth or a maze, of it being like, we're stuck here because either the door caved in or it's locked or like whatever happened that we got lost and we're in here now. With this dungeon being the thing alive, whether it be by the body, which I think you could do some cool stuff if you made it a giant transforming. I mean, you could pull some things like, you know, antibodies and stuff attacking them, which I think would be interesting. Or like, you know, different stuff. If you want to get biological about it, that'd be neat. If you want to get, not spiritual, but like haunted about it, you could do that. You have ghosts and things of that nature, and it'd be alive that way. But yeah, there's so much you could do. Oh, Evil Dead. Evil Dead. It's the simplest solution to all of this. So those who have not seen Evil Dead, relax, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But Evil Dead, the whole thing is, it's not clear how many entities there are, but there are enough to drive this cabin insane and do all this crazy stuff all the time. It could just be one thing. It could be multiple things. You don't know. But it's just things are moving. Things are switching. People are possessed. People aren't possessed. People are fighting on this. People are over here doing that. It's like so many things are constantly happening. And I feel like this would be a great time to incorporate that kind of idea into a living dungeon. To have it be that it's just insane. And then also that fits the survive the night thing, because for those who haven't seen Evil Dead, I will now spoil it. It is about surviving the night. So, yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. I got really excited about Living Dungeon there. I don't know what that was. But it was just like instantly, like, I love this concept and I'm here for it. And that's not even the one I came up with, so I'm very happy.
Yeah, I think you made a good point of, I think a Living Dungeon would just, it has to be keep constantly moving and shifting for your players to get confused and lost. Sorry, I got distracted from Cat. But I think the biggest goal is figuring out, for me, this seems like a middle to end game scenario where kind of like Hidar-ish or world consumer-ish of the night, what have you, is the overall arcing bad that you are going to try to avoid. So what is in the dungeon that can help you survive it, if that's the route you're going? Because what's on the outside that's not preventing it to coming into the dungeon, you know?
Yeah. So, funny you mentioned that. Alien vs. Predator, a fantastic movie that's incredibly underrated, has a very interesting premise similar to this, where it is, instead of a dungeon, it's a temple, and the temple constantly shifts so that at different points you can't get to certain rooms, or so that you can get a clearer passage to certain rooms. The goal of it ultimately is to survive the rooms, get through, and get to the point where you get the weapons that are only for the true warriors, and that's the whole point of the dungeon in their sense, is to get the weapons that they'll be able to use to stop whatever evil is being inside of the thing. Because it's like, if you're capable of surviving this, then you are like the true heroes who are meant to do this thing. Is the idea of the Predators, which is a whole thing about their whole, like, race tribe thing, where they're very obsessed with honor and proving that they're the level they should be. So, I feel like if you wanted to put that in this party's terms, you could have it be that it's like, you need this item, and whether or not the villain has built this dungeon to stop them, like, has found it and been like, oh, like, I think of kind of Samurai Jack. There's a lot of references again. I'm sorry, guys, but it's going to happen. Where he's like, oh, your sword? Yeah, well, now that's thrown into the future. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? You don't have any of your stuff. It's like, okay. Also, I know Samurai Jack's sword was not thrown into the future. That's technically incorrect, but we'll get to that later. But the thing of it being like your big weapon that you're supposed to kill the big bad with is no longer available because the big bad took it and went, nah, and just like chucked it away somewhere. And this can be the place you chucked it away to, where it's like, this is my dungeon. If you can even get through this, which it's not supposed to be survivable, it's supposed to be like, okay, you, because the point would be you get to the weapon, great. Then what? You still have to get your way out. Mm-hmm. You still have to fight your way out. And then even then, you'd still have to figure out if you can even get out to the villain. So this would be a hard thing. Yeah. This would not be for the faint of heart PCs, and this might be a multiple session dungeon, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, but it reminds me of the Mad Mage one that D&D has out. I think is like a prequel or a sequel to Dragon Heist. Mm. It's just like an insanely large dungeon. Which could be very cool. You could have your whole campaign inside of this living dungeon, honestly. Kind of like Plato's cave. Is there anything outside of it, you know? That'd be, actually, that kind of really piques my interest of having a whole session or a whole campaign inside a dungeon. Kind of, did you guys any watch Solar Opposites?
I did not.
All right, nope. It's like,
I know what it is.
Yeah, it's made by one of the creators or both of them of Rick and Morty. And like in it, there's a thing called the wall where these aliens shrink down random people and they throw them into like a wall, like a guinea pig or a naked mole rat colony you see at a zoo type thing, to watch them like scurry around. And it could be very interesting to just throw your players into this mad dungeon, living dungeon, and like the night is what they're in now is because there's no daylight. There's nothing.
Oh.
So now it's surviving the night is the theme, and they're trying to escape.
You know, I like that. And then also that gives birth to so many different concepts of things, like you said earlier, with vampires and different stuff. You can have them be here because it is eternally night. Like, you don't have the limits of, like, oh, they're never in danger. You're in danger.
Speaking
which, if my friend Jeff is listening, yes, that is a reference to you, Jeff. That was his Barbarian's War Cry. Just, you're in danger! And I was like, it's great. But, yeah, I like that concept of getting the inside to be eternally night and have it be threatening in that sense.
Yeah, I think that could be very cool. And then you can build a whole society based around it. You can have, like, maybe, like, pop-up towns or trading posts where people, like, get stuff from dead adventurers that have been thrown in here. Or, you know, like, they're selling, like, maybe you are inside of a Mad Mage's dungeon and he just chucks down one barrel of food a day and you're trying to trade, like, oh, I've got this wheel of cheese and I will trade this for your steel helmet, or, you know, type thing.
I don't know if I would want to make it a society down there, if only for the sense that that would add some sense of normalcy. I want them to be disillusioned, but I understand if you were to make this a campaign, that may be more viable to have that be an
option. But the normalcy is what's going to keep your players going, I would think. I think there's definitely times where you are going to, like, rip off the Band-Aid, I would say, and, like, just have some weird stuff in here, like a wall that eats one of their favorite NPCs, type of like shenanigans can definitely go down. I think maybe Call of Cthulhu, morphing that in a little bit would be nice. Sanity points.
I like that concept. Yeah, because, buddy, now we're talking.
Like, just imagine seeing a wall, like a stone wall with teeth and, like, lips and a mouth and stuff, and
it's a mimic wall.
Right, but it doesn't have to be, like, a mimic, though. Like, you know, mimics, like, this is just an enchanted wall that is, you know, if you don't want to go mimics. The only reason why I'm saying it doesn't have to be a mimic is because I saw on our list we also have, like, a thing called, of, like, lots of mimics or a town of mimics or something like that. So I didn't want to,
Lots and lots of mimics!
I didn't want it to be, like, if we ever get that one, a rebranding of this. But, you know, like, you can have the difference, like, the grotesque thing. Like, you can have, you know, a wall vampire.
I like it. I like the idea of, you could definitely use, like, more creepy things. You could do some drow stuff. You could do some big bugs. A lot of unsettling things within this dungeon. And then, of course, obviously having the dungeon itself be alive. Kind of like another reference for you guys, Night at the Museum, but without the museum ever opening again. It's just, they're constantly free to roam. And so it's like, oh, so you fight, like, suits of armor and stuff, and it's like, well, nobody's inside that. And maybe one day you're fighting, like, a suit of armor and somebody is inside that, and that will feel awful. But it's like, yeah, no, it's the thing of, like, it's constantly going to keep you guessing. It's constantly going to give you, I want kind of a mental exhaustion from this dungeon, particularly
Of course.
With the characters, not the players. I don't want to hurt my poor players, but I want to have it be that every time they do something, it's like, okay, that's the worst of it, right? We got through that. It can't possibly get worse. And it's like, oh, we found a whole pod of vampires that just hang out in this room and just drink from the bodies of people who've come in here. And it's like, well, we can't enter that room. Good thing they're all asleep. Like, it's, give them stuff like that, but, like, always have the thing of, like, ever-present danger and that they need to find a way out. If that is some sort of MacGuffin-y weapon, if that is some sort of, like, thing, how they get thrown in could be a number of ways. They can be told to go in. They could be told to kill a villain inside, which, as we talk more and more about how dangerous this dungeon is, I think is more likely to have it be a villain lair, to have it be a living dungeon.
Yeah, I like that. I think they could even, like, if they pissed off, like, an old man or something that has asked for change or something, he's, like, curses them, shrinks them down, and throws them into, like, his sack or something, you know, which teleports them into, like, this dungeon. I think that would be, that's a wonderful way of using this. I think exhaustion would be key here, using the exhaustion tools for D&D, if that's the system you're using. Just because if there's no day, it's very hard to tell when to go to bed. So if your players are like, just keep going and going, you can take away those short rests or those long rests, and then they really start to break. Because once you get to level 5 exhaustion, you're like screwed. Because I think it's
what I'm.
Yeah, you go.
What I'm thinking is also, because I'm thinking about our final boss, who he should be, what it should be like, and I'm thinking it's either like a wizard or a goat or like a lich that's like putting all of its energy into running this dungeon. Like it is the dungeon. It is actively making itself do all of the things. It is like plugged in like Palpatine. It is that level of like, I am in touch everything.
I love that idea. I think you could even go further with having phylacteries inside, and that's like the overall goal is to destroy all the phylacteries, except you don't know what they are. It could be that wall that they started level one in is a phylactery now, or it's that torch, which is really part of its heart or something. You know?
I'm not a wise man, so you're going to have to... I mean, I am a wise man. I'm decently wise, but okay. What is a phylactery? I've all this time, heard it...
It's essentially a Horcrux.
Yeah.
That's what I was gathering. I figured it was a D&D Horcrux. Horcruxes, for those who don't know, who didn't read Harry Potter... Understandable, it's okay. It's where you put your soul into an object magically. So a phylactery in this case would be just the parts of the dungeon this person has literally put their soul into.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like a grounding point for the lich so its soul doesn't go mad, basically. So it can have multiple. It spreads out its power a little bit. But I think if someone's this strong to make a living dungeon, they have it, you know, throughout. And this would also cause a little paranoia to set in. So you can start listening to your players if they get, like, conspiracy theories brewing and stuff like that. Go with them. Find what's that they're really like, oh, my God, we got to find this one, and I can't find it. You can even hint that maybe one of them are a phylactery. If you're going to be evil, and then it's like, oh my god.
So I really like the image of having this lich be kind of our big bad for this episode. And I just picture kind of the party finally making it to his lair, getting ready for the big showdown. And the lich has like this tattoo on their stomach that they can activate, and it eats the party. And so the party wakes up on the other side of this wall, where they're in this living dungeon, and they come to find out that they're actually inside the lich, like you said.
Ooh,
Everyone who's locked away inside just calls it the night. They don't call it whatever is the person's or the lich's name. And so finding those phylacteries inside of the lich, because they have the ability to shrink these things down, would be the goal of this. And because it's like a smart enemy, they would have people who work for them or servants, maybe undead or something, inside.
That work
as their antibodies.
I like that. Because then it's like you can have it be... It's not very magic school busy, which is what I was trying to avoid with the inside the body thing. Because I was like, that gets a little weird sometimes. But to have it be like, no, it's like the magical equivalent is this dungeon, which is constantly shifting and changing and being very weird. Because it's a lich, and it's like a magical dungeon that's inside of them.
And you don't have to worry.
That's going to be weird.
You don't have to worry about going through all the like, oh, this is the blood flowing, and these are the organs beating because he's undead.
Yeah.
And if he's made this dungeon, he can do all kinds of weird stuff with it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's so cool. Especially since, like, the whole concept of getting out of the night. Like, if it's later on in your campaign, you can have, like, that NPC at the tavern be like, oh, have you heard that the town over has fallen to the night? It's awful. And then, like, that's, like, your hook to get him in to go find the night. And then all of a sudden they realize it's not a thing. Oh, I mean, it's a thing, but it's not, like, a plague or anything. It's just one lich who is,
you know,
eating people.
It's fun. You know, it's funny that you say it's not a plague, because that's actually exactly what I was thinking of it as. Like, at least in the description, the build-up of it, to have it be like, oh, yeah, such and such got taken by the night, where it's like, it keeps happening.
Right.
Wherever these people go. And then as it builds up, as you get to your higher levels, because this will be hard, there is not really a way to make this easy, just have it be that it's... Like, you get in there, and it's like, oh, this is insane. You can't tell which way is what way. You can't tell what is how. You just know, like, the phylacteries are somewhere inside. Like, the lich can boast of this. You could have that knowledge beforehand. Someone in the town can know. Or you could be mean and just have to have them figure it out and be like, you were going up against the lich. What did you expect? He wasn't going to have a phylactery?
It would be nice if they have some background information. You could have them, for some reason, getting negative energy is what liches kind of run on. So if you have them get some kind of amulet that protects against that, when they're pulled into the night, they notice everyone else who is living is, like, slowly having their life force drained and they're dying because of all of this negative energy. But they're able to kind of stave it off, and that's why they're able to live a little bit longer and go and get...
Yeah, and keep their strength, too.
Yeah.
You're talking about a place in between the undead and the living, where it's just like, just that middle space, kind of. In a game that I've been playing with some of my friends, by the time this airs, we'll probably be past this point, hopefully. We were going up against some sort of mind controlling creature, and it had these people in, like, trances or charmed almost in a way where it was like they were fine, but they were just so destroyed because they couldn't do anything, and they very quickly realized that. So it could be kind of like a sickness, hopelessness, if you want to do it that way. Or again, it could be just the effects of the exhaustion kicking in. You could flavor that however you want it to look. And so it's like, no, these people are on, like, fifth level exhaustion. That's what happens if you don't get out of here. Like, you're going to look like you can't succeed at anything. You can't really move anywhere that fast. You're just broken. And you're just waiting for a sixth level where you're finally just done. So you could have it be that way, where you could really highlight that and show, like, oh, these people are, like, there. And they see you, but they're just so
drained,
sunken and weak. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really good.
I like that a lot, yeah.
But yeah, so we have that. We have the lich being the final boss. The goal of this dungeon is to find and destroy the phylacteries. This is a big dungeon. Big dungeon. Who knows how many rooms you want to put? 50, 100? Completely fine if it's a campaign. Don't do that if it's just one shot, because that's evil.
That's death.
It's a week-long one-shot.
Just non-stop dungeon.
So what kind of encounters do we want to put in for this dungeon? You definitely need to have, like, old organs attacking the player. Like, we can do some real Binding of Isaac stuff.
Okay. I'm into it. What else we got? Or describe that a little more, David.
I'm not going to go super into Binding of Isaac, because I've only played a little bit, but essentially it's like all these discarded body parts that have gained life that are kind of attacking the player. So you can have, like, blood that's been kind of corrupted that's attacking you. Like, you can have...
Like an ooze.
Yes. You can have, like, the liver. Now that it's shrunken up, it can kind of animate and come to life, and that can be one of either the rooms, or that can be in one of the rooms, and it's trying to fight you, process you.
I like that. And it's kind of like you have different things to be like poisonous air at certain points. You could have like different stuff where it's like you can't see really well. Mm-hmm. Acid has to be a thing at some point. Yeah. But yeah, you work with a lot of the stuff there where it's just like, oh, this is like deadly. It's a dangerous place. And you can have it. You can have it be that if you wanted to have it be a bit more stagnant and not move around and stuff, you can have it that way. If you wanted to have things move or collapse, because I always view Lich's body as constantly like collapsing and only magic holding it together. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting if you're inside the dungeon, like collapses a door and then like recreates a door somewhere else as the magical solution to it, like bouncing itself out that way. So you could have it be that it's like constantly in a sense of both repair and destruction caused by its own decay. Yeah, there you go.
And the Lich could even have played into that. Like, it knows that chunks of itself dies and regenerates. So that's how it helps create the dungeon.
Yeah. Okay, so we got, like, a liver. We got some acid from, like, a stomach or something. We got poisonous air, which can basically be anywhere inside a Lich.
Probably the lungs or the butt, though.
Yeah, that'd be good.
The lungs or the butt.
But yeah, I feel like you do that, you have those areas, you can have, and again, these can just be rooms. They don't have to be specifically like, oh, I go upstairs, now I'm in lungs, now I go upstairs again, I'm in brain. Like, it can be just the thing of like, he separates itself out and this is how it presents itself, because again, magic can do some kooky things. I don't think that you could just it doesn't need to be limited to go like, oh, well, now you're in a dungeon that's shaped like a body. It can be, you're in a dungeon that represents the body, and what you do to that dungeon interacts with the body. Like, it can be, like, almost like the dungeon itself is a phylactery in that way. Like, it's all connected to him, so if you damage something, maybe it hurts him, but maybe it's specific parts that actually hurt. Maybe the repair is a bit faster than the decay, or the decay that you can cause. So if you do something, it's probably not going to do that much. It probably has a lung, like, die each week, but it's like, okay, well,
it's slightly inconvenienced while you've messed with this body part.
It's problematic, but it's not in such a danger that, and that could be the other thing too, is that it could be like, if the Lich didn't view you, that could be the thing of like, the Lich did not view you as a challenge. It was like, oh, you're going to die inside of this, like, fake version of me. And then it's like, oh, well, they didn't die. They're killing me from the inside. At a point, the Lich will want you out. So it will try to give you an escape, and then you can decide then if you want to kill it on the inside or go to the outside and fight it there. And that can even be its own thing.
I mean, you could also have the party go against this Lich at a very low level, and then they get sucked in, and they spend the majority of the campaign inside growing levels, slowly losing their power, you know, until they get to like a certain level. And then it's like, you guys got to make a move or you'll not be able to, if you want to go that way too.
And you could even have like, maybe not something biological, maybe something spiritual inside of the Lich that represents kind of the humanity or whatever it used to be before it became this abomination. And so that could be where the party goes to rest, so that they're not being completely drained every day.
So in My Hero Academia, there's this part where there's a character where they're losing their powers, and they stand in front of a, like, fire. And that's kind of what I picture the humanity doing. It's like having the last spark in this, like, one area, and they're just there. And they're, like, not the swell old man. They have to be at that fifth level exhaustion like everybody else and just be like, I'm just keeping the fire going for as long as I can. And it's just like, you can have the party come in and see it and just go like, oh no, if that, like, it could be an instant thing of they recognize it, of like, you feel this is, you don't feel darkness here. This is the one place you feel safe. And it's like, that's bad if that goes out. And we can't help that guy, because it's not a thing of like, oh, I'm going to cast create bonfire on it. It's like, it's not what the fire is. It's not that kind of fire, really, buddy. Good.
I think this person could be the last, as you said, David, the last essence of who this lich was before they gave in to being a lich. Like, the last spark of good. Because with being a lich, I don't think they have to always be evil, but for the most part, it just means that they've stripped themselves of humanity in order to go purely god mode, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm.
And purely magic focused instead of life focused. So you can have that, and then you can have him kind of guide him around, get your party into them, everything, and then all of a sudden it's like they start fading away, and it's like, oh, you guys have one more battle to do, and then it's they have to fight him, the last speck of good before he fades away, in order to get strong enough to bust out.
Ooh. See, and here I was just going to use him for background information to tell him how to defeat the actual lich.
Well,
see,
yeah, you totally can.
I like yours.
You can totally
No, I like
that.
Yours way better.
Yeah, you get that. Maybe instead of a person, maybe it's the actual fire that they're contending with. It's like a little fire elemental that's actually putting this off. And they get smaller and smaller. And then at a certain point, they just change color of flame. So it goes from like the bright, nice feeling red to a kind of like draining, cold purple.
I like
that
a lot.
That's the symbol that they've gone too far, or that they're past being able to help.
Now, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Malcolm. Should we
go ahead.
Should we give our players an option to keep the light burning, effectively changing the lich back to normal?
That could be a cool option. Like, rather than destroying the phylactery, you basically bring it back to this person and cleanse it.
That could be interesting if you're a DM who doesn't like to sticking with things that are good and evil. Personally, I always like viewing alignments as, you know, like the pirate's code. It's more of a guideline rather than a set of rules parlay.
Okay, again, Mortal Kombat 11. because there's this really cool part where they bring a character back to life in that. And within that, there's this sense of like, oh, we got to get her soul back so she won't be evil. So they get her soul back, and it's like, wait, she's still evil. And she goes, yeah, I wasn't a good person before this. Like, you may have heard stories of the good work I did. That doesn't make me a good person. So I feel like that would also be an interesting thing where it's like, they're not a villain to your party, but they might still be an issue if you brought them back. Like, you bring them back and it's like, cool. And it's like, yeah, the type of person who would sell their soul for like unlimited power, though.
Not always a good person.
Is that really the type of person you'd want to bring back with said unlimited power? Like, sure, they have their humanity, so they'll be more careful with it now, but it's still like the thing of like, you didn't win. And I don't know, maybe I'm just being a little cynical about this one, but I don't want to give my players a win on this one. I don't want it to be like, hey, you did it, everything's good, go to the tavern, have a few drinks, and everything's great now. It's gotta be a thing afterwards where you're like, all right, there wasn't really a right answer. We just made it out.
We survived the
and
night.
We lived. Yeah, we survived. And we had the people, or we brought him back, or we killed him, either way, or her. We don't know what liches are. They could be whatever they want to be. Women can turn evil as well, sure. But they have it that it's like, okay, the party does what they do, and if they choose to bring this guy back, it'll be like, all right, cool. I have no qualms with you, but there are some kingdom, or there is a king I need to go see, and maybe it's not anything to do with you yet, but that can set up a thing for something else, where it's like, did you hear about the war going on over there? When did a war start? Oh, some magic dude came back. He's really strong. And it's like,
oops.
Oh, no. Is that our lich friend?
That's really good. I like it.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I want to run this one.
Yeah, this one's good. This one has some, like, real kick to it. So we didn't really talk too much about Encounters. I think we got like 4 laid out, but obviously you guys are very creative out there in the listener zone.
Yeah.
I was going to say the listener verse, but that opens way too much. Listener zone. Can let us know what you guys come up with too and tweet us.
Yeah. So should we move on to the recap in Synops now then?
Yep.
So your party has basically been eaten by a powerful lich. Their levels can be up to the DM. It could be the start of a campaign or towards an end of a campaign. But they are sucked in and brought into the lich to experience the living dungeon within them. Referred to by outsiders and insiders as the night. There is no sun. You have no idea what is lurking around any corner. Who can be bad? Who can be evil? Who can be an ally is all up in the air. But what you do know is that you must get out. And there's only one safe spot. The flame, the lifeline, the lifelight of this lich, its last speck of good, shines bright or dims depending on your decisions. What will you and your party do? We don't know, and we would like to, though. So give us a good old hashtag at FITGDND. Let us know how this goes, and maybe we'll be able to run this one for you guys. This sounds like a really fun one.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. That was real cool. I thought it was going to be like a thing where I was like, oh, hey, maybe this. But I was like, nope. No, that... Then we'd be picking a definitive path, and we don't necessarily want to do that, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think this one's pretty nice. I don't think we have to flush them all out 100%.
No, and that's... I agree.
I'm ready with the synopsis, if we're ready to move to that. Your party finally makes their way into the last chamber of this house. You've been hunting down a powerful lich called the Knight. You finally see your foe and begin battle with him when he rips off his shirt, and tattooed on his stomach is a large skull that slowly glows in purple light. There's a flash. Your party is temporarily blinded. Blinking, you look around and you're in a small, dark red room. The walls start to leak. And little blobs start forming. Their eyes point in your direction as they slowly move towards you, and mouths form as they try to start taking bites out of your party. You begin to defend yourselves, and the walls shift. There's a door that opens, and a little bit of light comes through. You see the lich, but a younger version with skin. Red light comes pouring through, and you feel warm. He says, come with me if you want to live.
Yes!
What do you do?
So is this the Lichinator?
Hey there, thanks for listening to Filling in the Gaps. Our theme music is Today by Limby off of their album Drive. If you like it, you can hear more from them at limby.bandcamp.com or on their actual play podcast, Bombarded. That's Limby, spelled LINDBY. And if you want to hear more from your host, well, you can find me, Malcolm, at The Ruler of Rhyme.
I am at DM Mambo 5.
And you can find me at Daedra 18, that is Daedra 18.
And you can follow the show at FitGDND or on our Discord server. We are always looking for new themes and scenarios to add to our list. The show is edited by our beloved audio gremlin, Andrew Brown. And you can follow them at Nubinator 912. Lastly, we are an Obtuse Audio Studios podcast, and you can learn more about us at obtuseaudio.com. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes, if that's what you think we deserve, but we hope you do. All right, thanks, have a great day, and be good to each other.
What's in your thoughts? Oh, what's in your mind? What fills your head and what leaves it behind? It's too much today. It's too much today.
Obtuse Audio.